Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Thomas Rickert, the GNSO-appointed co-chair to the CCWG. Can I get confirmation that the recording has been started?
Brenda says yes.
Brenda says yes, and the technical folks, thanks so much. Now, I'd like to welcome all of you to this face-to-face meeting of the accountability group in Hyderabad, and we would like to start on time because we have a lot of work to do today. But before we dive into substance of our work, let's do a little bit of administrative work first. For everyone who is in this room, you find coffee over there. Lunch will be served in this room, so you don't have to leave this room. We can stay here, and you will be fed, which is good. We will have Göran here after the coffee break for 1 hour, and therefore, let's make sure that we are on time in order to make sure that we make the best out of the time that we have with Göran. I would like the rapporteurs of the SOAs, of the Staff Accountability Group, the Transparency Group, and the Ombudsman Group to meet Leon and myself for a little huddle in the coffee break so that we can discuss a few things before we meet with Göran. But the idea in general, so that everyone knows, is that we're going to have this meeting, this 1 hour with Göran, in three blocks, if you wish. First, we're going to ask him to present his idea of the complaints office in a few minutes so that we don't base our views on hearsay, but that we get first-hand information from Göran. Then we would like to ask the rapporteurs of the three subteams, because these three subteams have the closest relationship to what Göran is planning to do, to specify to Göran what their requests of Göran are so that they better understand how his initiative and our work can be really intertwined and that there's no competing outcome. And as a third step, we would ideally like to agree on concrete steps with Göran or someone appointed by Göran to work with us so that we make sure that this is a cohesive scheme that everyone is working on. So I guess these should be my administrative introductory remarks, except for the usual roll call that we're going to take from the Adobe Room. So please make sure that you are joining the Adobe Room. Also, if you want to raise your hands, please do use the functionality in the Adobe Room for that matter. If you're on the phone line only, please do speak up now so that we can add you to the list of attendees. If you have an updated SOI, please indicate so that you can speak up now. But since we had updates to SOI so rarely, I'm not going to pause now, but just please make yourself heard if you have an update to share with this group. And finally, I would like to get your attention for the expected standards of behavior. I think there's even a slide outlining the expected standards of behavior, so that these are the ground rules on which we are working together. And we do want to hear as many of you during the day today. So we would really like this to be a meeting of all of us, where everyone gets the opportunity to speak. So as usual, we do have a clock lurking in the background, so if we see that there is a need for, you know, making sure that the statements are not too long, we might make use of that clock. Now, why are we here? We are here to work on work stream two, and as you all know, the transition is now over, but still, the turnout in the subteams is not as good as it should be. And I think that the subteams in work stream two deserve more attention because these are great topics to work on. And why, prior to the transition happening, you know, a lot of people may have thought, okay, I'm not sure whether I should really invest time in this because I'm not sure whether the transition will actually take place. This uncertainty is over. The transition is done. Now, others might say, okay, now the transition is done, why bother and work on Workstream 2? But as you may recall, in Workstream 1, we did only those things that were really needed to get the transition done. And we've often used the analogy of an architecture, the accountability architecture that we're building. So you might see this as the robust foundation of a house that we build. And we built this house, but there is no furniture in it, there are no windows in it, there's no door in it to make it a place worthwhile living in. And let's now make sure that this house gets windows, that it gets furniture, and that it's a good place for the multi-stakeholder community to live in. So our work is only half finished. Let's make sure that we finish it entirely. And let's particularly make sure that it's finished because we are under observation of the global community. They want to see whether we can deliver on our promise. We did it for the first half, but now we really need to make sure that we get the rest done. So this is the why, right? So we are here for the reason to make Workstream 2 happen, to complete our work, the important pieces of work that are underway. So let's work on that full throttle. How should we work on that? And, you know, these remarks in the next 2 or 3 minutes are my personal remarks only, so if you don't agree with them, just blame me. Don't blame my fellow co-chairs. Let me tell you a little story. I was chairing this quite controversial GNSO PDP working group on the protection of IGO and INGO names. And some of you in the room have been on this group, on this team at the time. We worked on recommendations, and we got rough consensus on recommendations. And those who didn't like the outcome of the consensus really hated and do hate the outcome of that PDP working group. But when this was brought to the GNSO Council, it was unanimously adopted. And even those who hated the recommendations as much as they could grabbed the mic and said, we still vote this up because we worked as a community. We got to consensus, and now we support the process. Now we support the consensus. And I think that's exactly the way it should be. Unfortunately, with our Workstream 1 recommendations, with our report, this was not true. We saw individuals, not from somewhere that didn't know, but we had individuals in our group with all the knowledge about what we did, and they went out and tried to torpedo the process as much as they could. And not only did they torpedo the process, but they were misrepresenting facts. They were putting the outcome of our work upside down in order to make sure that the transition doesn't take place. And this is something that I hope we will not see in Workstream 2. This has been called unfair by some. I would call it backstabbing, to work in this team and then go and have other motives and other criticism that hasn't been raised inside this team to basically torpedo this whole process. I guess this is something that we should not have in future, particularly since the world is watching us now. This is the first opportunity for the community to work under this new regime, and the community itself needs to be accountable and play by the rules. So, in conclusion, we have done something very remarkable in Workstream 1. We've done something unprecedented in Workstream 1. Let's make sure that we not just rest on our laurels, but that we take this to the next level and that we show to the outside world that this really works and that we can deliver the full accountability concept. Let me quote my friends from the rock band Van Halen, who said, only time will tell if we stand the test of time, in their song, Why Can't This Be Love? So we will not know, we can't know now whether the multi-stakeholder model as we see it today will be there in a couple of decades' time, but we are now setting the rules, and we can work on the probability of whether this is going to succeed or not. And all the topics for Workstream 2 are important to make sure that this overall concept is robust enough not only to protect ICANN and ICANN's mission, but also to function as a role model for other challenges that we see in the internet world that could make good use of a multi-stakeholder approach. So with that, let me end my introductory remarks. Thank you for your attention, and over to Leon for the next agenda item.
Thank you very much, Thomas. This is Leon Sanchez. And our first agenda item is the PCST report. And I'd like to highlight the excellent support and work that the PCST and the ICANN finance team has been performing. I would like to thank, of course, Bernie as the head of the PCST, and I'd like to handle it to Bernie so we can have a report, and after that I'll make a couple of remarks on that. So Bernie, you have the floor.
Thank you, Leon. Morning, everyone. I'm not going to ask if you can hear me. I'll do some introductory remarks. I'll go through the reporting for the community part of the figures, and then we're fortunate enough to have Xavier Calvez to my left here, who, as you know, is the senior finance person at this table, and he'll go over the remaining reports for the ICANN part. It's been a process, just to catch everyone up. In Marrakesh, the PCST was formed to understand the expenses to date on the transition and to help set up a financial tracking system and responsibility for part of the transition budget for Workstream 2. So it's not a question that we're responsible for the entire budget, but we've been allocated certain parts, and we are responsible for those parts as to how we manage them. We then produced a budget for Workstream 2 while we were in Finland, and that budget was last month approved by all the chartering organizations. So we do have an official budget for the transition, which includes Workstream 2 and the IRP IoT. We are tracking against those elements. As you will see in the report, there are two main sections. There's the community part, the part that this group is responsible for, and your co-chairs have accepted to be the ultimate persons responsible for managing that part of the budget. The remainder of the budget is the responsibility of ICANN, and we will be tracking that on a regular basis. We needed to do a little work to get started. We have today the reports. For those who are not familiar with the ICANN fiscal year, it begins at the beginning of July. And so we are presenting today the results for July, August, and September. We have also established a process whereby 30 days after the close of the month, every month, the numbers will be made available, will be presented to the co-chairs to make sure everything is okay, and then within 5 days after that, I believe, Xavier, they will be made public as these numbers have been made public. So everyone will see exactly where we are on the spend rate and how we are doing this, and we will have the ability to answer questions from the community when these things are presented, should you have any. So we only have 5 minutes, so I will make this very quick. For the community part, which are the top lines, we only have IRP Phase 2 and Workstream 2. For IRP, the only expense has been external legal expenses, which are well within the parameters of what was forecast for that. The project was front-loaded, so although it's a significant part of that budget, that is not unexpected. For the Workstream 2, versus the elements of the budget for which we are responsible, which is travel and legal and other professional services. For those 3 months, we have had no expenses. Obviously, funding for travelers to this meeting will mean that there will be expenses in the next report, which will cover October, and then further costs will be included in November. So before I hand it over to Xavier, I will take any questions if anyone has them. It doesn't look like it. I'll hand it over to Xavier for the ICANN part. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernard, and good morning or good evening or good afternoon, everyone, depending upon where you are. I just want to take a step back on what Bernie explained, and Thomas just said a little bit earlier, too, that we needed to take things to the next level, and I think the process of that led to the approval by the chartering organizations of granting the CCWG co-chairs the authority to manage a budget relative to a fraction of the activities of this group is a historical move in the life of managing resources for working groups at ICANN. So I think it's an admirable step forward. And it's the multi-stakeholder at work, the model of multi-stakeholder, and it's all about accountability and transparency. So I think this is a reality, if not just words, and this reality is embodied by the co-chairs and their acceptance to taking this responsibility of managing the budget. And the PCST is simply there to support them in their role and enable them to be able to demonstrate to you as members of the CCWG, but also to the public, their responsibility in managing those costs and the transparency about it. So on a monthly basis, as Bernie said, this report will be published after it will have been reviewed by the co-chairs and understood by the co-chairs, and we will also support the co-chairs in producing forecasts on an ongoing basis so as to have a maximum visibility as to the future costs associated with the activities here, so that there is planning and anticipation of any possible issues in the future, which is what a forecast helps doing. Relative to the transition, implementation, and general activities, you can see that there is a fairly significant amount of resources that has been incurred over the first 3 months of the fiscal year, which is what this period covers, and not surprisingly, since the implementation of the transition has largely included the activities relative to the PTI and its formation of all the contracts that have been put in place to organize the relationships between the various partners, including the PTI, but also the RIRs, the IETF, etc., etc. You're all very well aware of all the relationships that have been put in place under contracts, and that activity has taken place during the 3 month period that we're talking about right now. So there's been an intense amount of activity of the staff support, of yourselves. You have participated to these activities. There's been, of course, a large support of the legal firms in writing contracts, various iterations on the contracts, and that is reflected here in the legal services that have been incurred. Of course, it is, this work was a one-time work and is largely completed, and therefore there will be little costs incurred relative to that specific part of the implementation, simply because the implementation is basically completed from that perspective. So the costs were again front-loaded here relative to the implementation, and it is expected that these costs will be minimal through the rest of the year. So this is why you can see in the comments, for example, that though the 3 months that have passed represent only 25% in quotes of the fiscal year, this is 3 months out of 12, there is about 33% of the budget that has been spent due to those front-loaded implementation activities. At this stage, I won't go in further in the details. I will simply check if there's any questions or comments from anyone in the room or in the Adobe room.
Thank you very much, Xavier, for this explanation, and thank you for all the work that you have been performing throughout these months. And I see that Sebastian Bachelet has his hand up. Sebastian?
Yeah, maybe I just got the answer. Sebastian Bachelet speaking. The last column, 25% for everything, it's day, taking into account, it's 3 months over 12 months. Okay, that's not very clear, but okay. And my second question, maybe it's for Bernie, we will have to include somewhere in the budget what we will do about the review of the Ombuds Office, how we will deal with that in the future. Thank you.
As to your second question, we're still working on that, so I don't have a solid answer for you, but we're aware we have to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next on the queue is Cavus.
Thank you. Good morning or good day to everybody. Similar, more or less, questions that I understand relation between 33% and 25%. What is the guesstimate for the next 3 months? Do we go to 40% instead of 25%? And the last and more important question that I raised to one of the co-chair, and the answer was not very convincing, is there any time limit to complete the work within the framework of the budget? As a guideline for the rapporteur of the aid group to know that they don't have unlimited time available because the budget is limited. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. Bernie or Xavier?
I'll try to answer the first part of Kavus's questions. I think that to provide a rough estimate to your point, I'm suspecting that we will be closer to the 50% or maybe a bit over between 50 and 60% spend after the 6 month period. This is 3 months. If we look at the next quarter of activity, we will be a bit over the 50% simply because we are now already over the 25%. But from this point on, I'm expecting the spend to be a little bit more linear. Staff support is fairly linear, and there is not as much looking forward, as much legal spend as there has been over the past 3 months due to the writing of the agreements. Now, there is the budget for legal fees that is available on the basis of the requests that will be formulated to use it, but I'm expecting that to be spread over the remaining 9 months of the year. So I would expect that we would be in the 50 to 60% at the next 3 months mark, and I'm using 3 months because we've passed 3 months now, so it's 3 months forward, but the report will be produced on a monthly basis. And regarding the work on the WS2, I'll let you answer, Liam.
Thank you very much, Xavier. Kavus, on the culture side, I can tell you that, yes, we are aware that we have limited time to carry on workstream 2. Nevertheless, we have to remind ourselves that workstream 2 was structured to leave those points that were far more complex that than those in worship one, and also would take more time to be discussed and agreed by the community. So my take on this is that although we have been having many calls in the different groups, and some of them might seem to be theorizing in the points that they're discussing, I think that one of the expectations of our face-to-face meeting today is that we will be able to refocus those groups that have been discussing themes theoretically in order to bring them back to pragmatism, and so that we are able to actually make progress on the different working groups with this theoretically basis that has been already discussed, but then landing it into a pragmatical terrain. So I think that that would be one of the expected outcomes of our face-to-face meeting today. I hope that answers your question. Okay, so I see no other hands raised on this topic, no more questions. So I'd like to thank, of course, Xavier and Bernie for your input and your updates. And since we are now responsible for our budget, I think that the next step is to actually review how are we going to report on our progress and our budget. And for that, I would like to invite Karen Mulberry to the table so she can present to us the dashboard that has been introduced in previous calls for the progress tracking of our group, and also highlight that this is the first time that we have a tool like this dashboard for this working group, and it's the first time that we are responsible for the budget that we're spending. So we need to, of course, honor the work that we have been doing in Worship 1 and act in full transparency. For that is this dashboard, so that we can be transparent about how we are spending the money that the community has approved, that the different chartered organizations has approved for the ZCWG to actually spend for their work. And also keep in mind that we will be speaking about legal costs later on this on today's meeting, and I have a proposed way forward to address the different legal issues that might be coming up in the different subgroups. So now I would like to handle the floor to Karen so she can present to us the dashboard. Karen?
Thank you very much, Leon. I wanted to let everyone know that what we have to present today is actually factual data. What we've shared in the past has been a template with data that has been populated to give you an example of how things would look. But so today we've got actual data as of October for the activity of the CCWG, both the plenary and the subgroups. So if you look at this slide, this is a general summary of the activities of the group for the month of October, based on what has been, we can capture from emails and that are exchanged by the group, by the number of participants who have signed up versus the number of people, because we can't discern on a meeting whether you're a participant or not, the number of people who are participating in meetings. So you can get a good sense of the activity. As you can tell, we've had some drops in terms of the average community members participating in things, as well as the number of different constituencies that have participated in sessions. Now, those are the top two pods. If you look at the bottom, that's the timeline that was agreed, and the tracks for the various subgroups. Now, this was a guide, and so using that, we've kind of tried to gauge the progress of the work of the group itself. Next slide, please. There we go. Now, these are the subgroups' progress report. Each subgroup submitted a report. We asked to have the information in by October 25th so that we could produce an official report with all the data by November 5th. So our plan is actually to publish this on November 5th. But this is the status report. This is where each group has indicated where they stand with their progress and a summary of what they're focusing on and the updates from the group itself. So this will be done every month. So the community will have a sense of where everything stands. Next slide, please. We will also include in the dashboard the budget update, similar to what Bernie just presented to the group. We'll try and capture that so it's all in one location. And we have notes in terms of what the budget details are and what that means. And there again, it will be updated and reported on the 5th of the month. Next slide. Now, each of the subgroups have been asked to submit a report, too, so you can get some details of the specific activities within a subgroup, how many participants have been attending the various conference calls. Slide, please. Thank you. So each subgroup will have a report like this. It's filled out by the rapporteurs in terms of the scope of the work they're doing. You can see the details from the wiki page, which we've captured, in terms of the rapporteurs, how many active participants have signed up, the observers, and links to various details. And then you can see the activity based on the number of meetings, the number of active participants, and then the number of emails that are exchanged on the list that was created specifically for that subgroup. That's the data that we can track. We have the work plan summary, so you can see kind of the outline of the approach that the group has decided to take for their work, and then the updates that they've provided. So each subgroup will provide reports like this on a monthly basis, and we will post those on the wiki so the community can get a sense of how well the work is progressing here in this group. Next slide, please. So there's another example of the human rights group and the data that we've captured and the status that was reported by the subgroup. So as you can see, there will be all of those for every subgroup. Now, if you move to the appendix, please, and that's slide number 17 in this deck. It's a measurement of progress that was developed so that each subgroup can report on their progress using a common format between them. So there's similarities in comparison of progress for everyone so you understand what it means when they say they're at a different percentage. This is the key that was developed. So this is presented to you for consideration. If it is acceptable, we would like to publish it on the 5th of November. It will be posted on the wiki page for the CCWG accountability, and you can use that then to report on progress and success to the rest of the community members and within your constituencies. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Karen. We do have a question in the chat by Jorge Cancio, and he's asking on how is the average participation rate calculated or established. So if you could please give us live on that.
Let me go back. Now, the average was calculated based on the number of participants over time, and then, you know, you've got X number of meetings, X number of participants, and it equals the average for that period of time. So it was just something very simple to kind of project participation and participation rates in particular.
Thank you very much, Karen. So are there any other questions or comments? Avery's got a question as well, I think.
I can speak to it.
Oh, if you could please, Avery.
Yeah, I didn't raise my hand on it, but I'm being grumpy about it all. In that we've basically created more work for the rapporteurs who are doing this. We are now got a set of metrics that basically it's kind of like teaching to the test. We're going to have to do our work in a way that can be measured favorably. And, you know, for example, if a group decided to do all its work in drive documents, it won't be measured. So I can't say I'm happy about this. I can understand doing it, but I'm just very grumpy about it. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. Any comments to that, Karen?
You know, I'm sorry, it's the data we have available, and wanted to make sure that we reflect the attendees and the people who have signed up to be participants and the number of meetings. So that's what we have to work with.
Thanks. And I see Jorge's hand is up. Jorge?
Thank you. My virtual hand is... has disappeared because I have some problems in accessing the virtual room. But it was a follow-up question, because if I understood you correctly, active participation is measured by the showing up of those who are registered as active participation in one of the Adobe room meetings, or how is it measured exactly? So we have 100 members, for instance, in the working group as active participants, and we have 10 meetings, and 40 people out of the 100 show up in one of those 10 meetings. They sum up to 40% of participation rate, or how is that established exactly? Thank you.
And you say the participation rate is averaged, and it's based on the indicators that you noted. We ask initially when we formed the subgroups for people to sign up to be active participants. Those names are listed on the wiki pages. They're added to as people indicate that they want to be active participants. So, you know, it's not a stable number. It grows. There's also people who sign up to be observers. But we try and track the active participants because it was defined as those who indicate that they're in that category will actively be helping out the subgroup. They're not just following the work of the subgroup that they had volunteered to be active members. That's the data we have. And then we just average that based on the number of people who participate, which we capture from the meeting records.
Thanks, Garrett. I have three people in the queue, and I'm closing the queue with Niels. So I have Cavus, Alan, and then Niels. So Cavus, could you please take the floor?
Yes, thank you very much for the information. Apart from the openness and transparency, to what extent this information is useful for the public to be published? Because we are not checking the validity and the way that has been gathered. Apart from that, without making any criticism to everybody, how much time you have spent to prepare this book? Does it really outweigh the activities that you have done to prepare all these details and so on and so forth, so just to know the usefulness of that. And in the next 3 months, it will be more difficult going to all those. I have seen many groups, and I know the degree of activities and questions raised. So to what extent they are useful for the public? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavus. Any reaction to that, Karen?
Well, I say I would defer to the co-chairs in terms of the usefulness of the data. The data itself is captured from the meeting reports and what has been reflected on the wiki pages by who signed up for what. So the data is what it is. It does take a little bit of time to prepare, but, the value the co-chairs can express their opinion on what that means.
Yeah, let me just briefly respond to that. Ultimately,
Whether you think it's useful or not is not just for us to determine. It's a discussion for our group. But if you look at accountability of our group and transparency on where we are, we think this is useful so that the community can see where we are with the different projects. I mean, this is quite a big project also in terms of project management. We have 10 different topics that are working in parallel. So we, from a chairing perspective, need to get a view on how far the different projects are, whether we need to assist certain projects particularly in order to make sure that we all deliver on time. I think this information deserves to be out there for those who are interested. Whether you think it's useful or not, maybe that's a discussion for us to have on the mailing list. So we're open to that, but we definitely think that this is helpful, and we also think that we really take transparency of the work on the way to the next level if we publish this type of information.
Thanks, Thomas. Next on the queue, I have Alan Grunberg.
First, a quick question. The attendance, as you pointed out, the membership changes over time. Is the denominator captured at the time of the meeting, or is it the high water mark ever, or what?
It's captured at the time of the meeting.
Okay. I guess this is going to sound like I'm against transparency, but people sign up for these things as participants for a variety of different reasons, some with the good intentions and never fulfill it, but they don't take their name off. Others have motivations that occasionally they're going to want to participate. So the rules are, if you want to be able to speak, you have to be a participant. I think we're going to end up seeing very low numbers, which will be used against us, to be blunt, saying that there was such low participation, the recommendations are not valid. Whereas I suspect of the real people who really want to participate, the actual numbers will be much higher. I understand it's probably too difficult to ask each of the participants, are you really participants or not? But I'm a little bit worried that the numbers will end up making us look like we have five people who are, you know, making all the decisions that everyone else is just, you know, shaking their head yes and not paying attention. So I do have a worry about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Next to the queue, I have Niels.
Thank you very much. And aside from my content question, I have a bit more of a process question, and specifically pertaining the first orange indicator, namely the production of a subgroup draft for consensus. So we have had, since the beginning, a regular subgroup drafts. But for me, it's a bit unclear what you mean. It's like, does this mean that there is a draft on which there is consensus, which is moving to consensus? So this, it seems a relatively broad and indicator that's not completely clear to me. So it would be great if you could elucidate that a bit.
Yes. To respond, what we were trying to outline is when you have a draft that's stable in the group that you're going to present to the plenary for discussion. Trying to track that because I know you have drafts within the group, but then the process needs to go to the plenary for their review, two readings, for it to be adopted and then move on so that we can issue it for public comment to gather further feedback on the subgroup's recommendations. So we're just trying to come up with a mechanism for capturing when the work goes from the subgroup to the plenary for discussion.
But that seems to be the second indicator, right? Produce a draft for CCW's G consideration. So that seems to be the point that you're describing. Once we have consensus in the subgroup for it to move to the CCWG, and then the next indicator is CCWG approval. So what would be the first indicator? Because now the first and the second indicator seem to mostly overlap.
Pretty much so, yes. And I mean, you could indicate within your subgroup that draft is where you are in terms of your status of the work. I was looking at it in terms of you've got a stable document at that point, because you've got, in terms of scoping and other development, different steps. I mean, if you have some suggestions for a better way to define what that step might be, very happy to make some modifications to make it clear. Our only intent was to have measurements be uniform for all the subgroups so that people have a good sense of the progress and there's some commonality that we can establish.
Thanks, Karen. So what I'm hearing is that the dashboard seems to be a good idea, a good tool for us to continue reporting our progress, but it certainly needs to be adjusted at some ends. So I would like to add as an action item to actually have feedback from the larger or the plenary CCWG as to which points should or could be adjusted to better reflect how the different subgroups are working and progressing in their respective topics. So this should be, or this would be, a discussion carried out in the list so that we can, of course, listen to the different points that could be actually improved in this reporting dashboard. So with that, I would like to thank you, Karen, for your presentation on the dashboard. And I would like to go to our next agenda item. And I do note that Greg had his hand up, but I had closed the queue with Neil. So I apologize for that, Greg. And I'd like to handle the floor now to my co-chair, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Leon. We need to speed up a little bit in order to get back some of the time that we spent on this discussion, which hopefully we're going to continue on the list. I would like to invite Larissa to the table. She's going to give us a brief update on ATRT2, and after that we're going to have a quick update on ATRT3 and the discussion with the board. And Steve Dobianka has kindly agreed to update the group on this. So, Steve, if you want to come to the top table, please do now so that we don't have a lot of much time between those two sessions. Larissa, over to you. And I also would like to welcome Lars to the table. Hi.
Hello, everybody. I'll see if we can get you all back on track. Last time, I was with you to talk about the ATRT2 implementation update. We showed some slides and provided some links. So at this point, I just wanted to remind you that we do provide quarterly updates, and the update as of the September cutoff will be published very, very shortly. And overall, the ATRT2 implementation work is winding down, which is good, just in time for ATRT3 to get kicked off. So Brenda and Karen, I think, will be posting the links in the chat room so that you can find your way to the ATRT2 update that's posted on the wiki. Additionally, I just wanted to clarify, I know that there were some tasks that were originally included in ATRT2 implementation that ended up getting moved out of that work plan due to potential overlaps with the work that you are all doing, one of those areas being the ombudsman. So I think that there will be a discussion later today on that topic, but I just wanted to let you know that funding for the independent review of the ombudsman function, which was originally envisioned as part of the ATRT2 implementation, that work was envisioned as part of the ATRT2 implementation. Funding for that has been secured as part of the ATRT2 implementation funding, so you all will have an opportunity to move forward with that work under the subgroup in Workstream 2. And then as we followed some best practices and project management disciplines in the implementation of HRT2 recommendations. We certainly learned a lot about the process of implementing and measuring and tracking and reporting out, and welcome feedback from you as to how we might be able to make this better for our next implementation projects. And also I wanted to, at this point, introduce Lars, who will talk just very briefly about some of the related areas between ATRT2, ATRT3, and some of the other work that he's doing with us. Lars?
Thank you, Larissa. Thanks, Thomas, and everyone for giving me the floor for a couple of minutes. I'm going to be talking just very briefly about accountability and diversity, and just wanted to call to your attention those obviously two subgroups here for WS2, Workstream 2, and it's also something that will feature in the operating standards that are linked to the reviews. That's a community-led effort that I'll have the pleasure to support as the staff. At the very least, I hope it'll be a pleasure. We'll kick that off on Saturday this week. I hope many of you can make it. As I said, accountability, diversity, transparency are all issues that are important for your effort here, but it's also something that you might want to take into account when it comes to the operating standards for the review team. Both Larissa and I have some experience for various areas within ICANN that we worked at. Some of you might know I've worked in the policy department before. So we have some expertise and insight that we would be happy to share with you if there's any support that you might need from us. And so it's really just a call to A, it would be great if you can help kick off the drafting of the operating standards on Saturday, and also if ever you need to have any support in terms of research or other information that you might need, feel free to reach out to Teresa and her team, including myself. And I think that's all for me, Teresa.
Thanks so much, Larissa and Lars. Any questions for Larissa or Lars? Sebastian, your hand is raised. Where are you?
Yes, thank you. Sebastian Bachelor is speaking. Just to understand, that's a discussion we had within Workstream 1 and Workstream 2 about diversity, for example, and transparency of the review team as the review are now embedded in the bylaws. Then haven't we created another parallel track here that we don't need? I am not sure I understand well what we are doing and what you are proposing to do. If it's not clear, I can repeat it, but it seems that you were having some face mimics, and I don't...
No, Sebastian, I think it's just an acoustic issue that we're having. Can you please repeat the question for us?
Yes, about the acoustic issue, I would like the co-chair to ask to have the headset right now and not waiting for the interpretation for tomorrow, because the headset will help the acoustic to be better taking care for us. And I have the same problem to hear you, then it's bad for all of us. To be short, it seems that Lars is starting another group to talk about diversity, transparency in the review teams. And it's exactly part of our job in Workstream 2. It was in Workstream 1. Then haven't we created a parallel track taking outside of what we are doing, or something we are, it's our responsibility. Because I remind you, documents we produce in Workstream 1, where Leon was co-chair about diversity, we specifically write something about any new team, review team, groups need to be as much as possible diverse and that need to take into account other duties or other way to be created. And it's why we have this diversity group, transparency group. then I just want to be sure that we are not duplicating the work and asking us to be in two different places to discuss the same thing. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. Now that was loud and clear. Lars, you want to respond to that?
Thank you, Thomas. Yes, thank you, Sebastian. I'm so glad you asked that question because I don't think I was particularly clear. The aim is not to create a second process or to take anything away from your remit or the scope of your work. As you point out correctly, the reviews now fall into the new bylaws, and the new bylaws also call for operating standards to be developed through the community consultations to support those bylaws. And aspects that fall under the operating standards for reviews are issues that are related to transparency and diversity. And I just want to say that there is an overlap potentially with your work. So people who are engaged in this process here in the Workstream 2 and also might be interested in working together on the operating standards. I'm not kicking off the group. I'd just be supporting the group, and we're starting the discussion on how the process will work with the community on Saturday. So it's not something that is underway or I'm kicking off or I want to, any scope will be taken away from you. It's just that there is some overlap in areas and subjects that are important for you as well as for the operating standards and future reviews. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lars. I suggest that if there are remaining questions open for Sebastian and how this would work together, I suggest that you take this offline and we take it back to the plenary if need be. So with this, we would like to thank the two of you for being concise, for giving us an update on ATRT2. And now, without any further ado, I'd like to hand over to Steve Del Bianco to give us an update on ATRT3 and the interaction that we had with the board.
Thank you, Thomas. Steve Del Bianco. The plenary for the face-to-face in Helsinki, if you recall, at the end of that day, this group took up a proactive concern that we were well aware that the ATRT3 was scheduled to begin in January of 2017. We were well aware that the scope of ATRT3 had significant overlap with Workstream 2 in two ways. 6 of the 9 Workstream 2 projects dealt with the same kind of accountability that would have been within the scope of ATRT3, and the volunteers who would work on ATRT3 have a significant overlap with the people that are in Workstream 2. So we tried to be responsible. We debated at the end of that meeting, sending a letter to the ICANN board informing them about the potential overlap and recommending a solution. In August the 8th, we made a recommendation where we suggested that ATRT3 could begin in January or even sooner, but that we recommended they limit their scope to the implementation of the ATRT2 items and not dive into the 6 specific areas that the bylaws anticipate for ATRT3 with respect to accountability of the board, public comment, input process, effectiveness interaction with the GAC, et cetera. That letter went to the board. Subsequently, we were able to get the ICANN bylaws amended with the completion of the transition, and then the board replied to us on the 24th of October, and that's the letter that you have in the Adobe chat. The board acknowledges that we have valid concerns about overlap, and given that the board realizes it's sort of out of their hands, they took our letter and their reply and forwarded it to the chairs of the SOs and ACs. Because a number of you are aware that the affirmation of commitments was the governing document of ATRT3 at one point, but the affirmation of commitments might still be alive, but it's a vestige of the past, and the ATRT3 will be governed by the bylaws from now on. So in those bylaws, in Section 4.6, the ATRT3 team will come together in January, and they may assess certain items, but they shall assess the implementation of the prior ATRT2 implementation. So I do hope that the leaders of the SOs and ACs will understand that there isn't a significant need to dive into the overlapped items of Workstream 2, and it ought to be clear to them that we can handle those, and that ATRT3 should just look at the implementation of ATRT2 items to a greater degree than what the dashboard that staff puts out, but a substantive, a qualitative assessment as to whether they've been implemented, and then get back on another 5-year cycle 5 years hence when ATRT4 would be able to look at the implementation of things that came out of Workstream 2. So in Annex 9 of our actual final report from the CCWG, that was the section of our recommendations that dealt with the reviews, we had said, quote, that after the bylaws have been implemented, that ICANN and NTIA should mutually agree to terminate the affirmation of commitments, thus leaving the bylaws to control the ATRT3. I'm unaware as to whether they've mutually terminated the affirmation of commitments, but be that as it may, let's park that for now and allow us to focus on the fact that the board has acknowledged that CCWG made valid recommendations to avoid overlap. The board has pushed it over the SOAC leaders. So, Thomas, at this point, all I would recommend is that we be sure that Crocker's letter is accompanied by the analysis that the CCWG did. I realize they have our August letter, but we did a four-page analysis on where the areas of overlap lie, and I believe that that should be conveyed as well. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. We do have time for one or two questions. There don't seem to be any, which is great. Let's make sure that we follow up. I guess while this is not really our core mandate, we should stay in touch with the board and the SOAC leaders in order to make sure that this works as seamlessly as possible.
Agreed.
Thanks so much for being concise, Steve, and for providing this this very condensed update to where we are with ATRT 3. Thanks so much. Sebastien, may I invite you to the table? Sebastien, as you know, is working a lot on the ombudsman sub-team, and he's going to provide you with a little update on where the sub-team stands, and there will also be room for interaction with the plenary. So I would suggest that Sebastien does a quick presentation of where things stand with the ombudsman team, and then we're going to have a little Q&A before we have our coffee break. Sebastien, over to you.
Thank you. Short and prepared, but I will not give you the presentation. I already give you a short presentation during the last call, and I will not repeat it. I want to concentrate myself when we will have the presentation on one single topic. It's where we are regarding the review of the Ombuds office. And I have just take those elements out to show you four slides. Then we accept, I don't know if we have a possibility to say no, to take on board the recommendation from ATRT2 to review the ICANN Ombuds office. Now that the budget is confirmed, our next step would be, or could be, it depends also of your agreement. Sorry. Commission the evaluation and oversee the contractor. That could be the role of the ICANN Ombuds sub-team. Analyze any issue raised and propose recommendation if required as per the new context of the ICANN Ombuds office. And we will have to revise the schedule to take all those tasks into account. One of the questions here is how we deal with the other subject, new responsibility for the ICANN Ombuds office, for example. Do we do some work in parallel? Do we do everything on the same? We wait for the review to be done to relaunch our group to work on those other issues. I don't know where the slide is, but or are they are supposed to be on the deck somewhere?
Can we?
I just resent
the slides to staff. Can I get confirmation that staff has it and that it's going to be uploaded? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Then we need obviously to prepare for this external evaluation of the ICANN Ombuds office. For that, we need to develop requirements and deliverable lists. identify review oversight mechanism for the vendor, develop vendor selection process. When I say develop, I hope that I can procurement has already a selection process, but to be more specific on our need. Confirm a final report acceptance process. And we think that the evaluation, the external evaluation, could include the following. Current ombudsman charter and operation. If you can go to the next slide, I am talking about. To see what is the current charter against industry best practice and the recommendation for any change necessary to ensure that the ICANN Ombuds Office has a tool, independence, and authority needed to be an effective voice for ICANN, for all ICANN stakeholders. And to finish, we will need to define the role of the different entity, us here as a CCWG and accountability plenary session, the ICANN Ombuds Office drafting team, the current Ombuds or Ombuds Office, the staff, and I list, you can change the slide please, and I list the following staff, of course, the one following us here as policy staff support, the multi-stakeholder strategy and strategic initiative, including the one specifically in charge of the review, just to be sure that we are doing in the same standard as other review. I guess legal and purchase will have to be involved one way or another. That's the end of my presentation, and I am open to have any discussion, question. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sébastien, for this quick overview, and sorry for us not having had the slides ready in the AC room from the very beginning. Herb.
Oui, bonjour, Sébastien, merci. Good morning, everybody. Seeing as this is a face-to-face meeting, for one of the first ones I will be attending as the Ombuds, I thought I would take the opportunity to say hello to everybody and stand up so that you can actually see my face. And if my office will be opening up tomorrow, and I invite all of you to please drop by and say hello. I'm looking forward to meeting you and discussing some of this as we move forward. Thank you.
So Herb is over there. Welcome, Herb, and thanks for your active participation in the sub-team and helping to make this work. Are there excuse me, more questions from your side? Okay, Cavus has raised his hand. Cavus, please.
Yes, I put my question in the chat, but I can't raise the hand, unfortunately, by the system. So the question is that, Sebastian, have you identified any difficulty with the existing situation that you are planning to do so many things? Thank you.
In one hand, yes, it's more work, more things to be done, but in the same time, I think for the organization, as it was planned for a long time, one day we need to do it, and what a better time to do it, including in our work, Stream 2 work, because it will help us as a whole group to better understand where we stand with the current ombuds, and we will have an outside inputs to help us to define how to move the ombuds in the future. For example, I am waiting for some help in the answers. Can we add to the ombuds office some other activities that it's not really caught as an ombuds or not? And we had this discussion internally to have an outside view of, I guess it will be
someone with a very good knowledge of Ombuds Office, it will be helpful. And yes, it's more work, but at the end, I think it's better for everybody. The question will be how we will handle that in the agenda, and that I have no yet answer on that. I need to work with staff to define the agenda for the future on those issues. Thank you.
I don't see any other hands raised. Okay, that seems to be it for this part of the session. So, Sebastian, would you like to make any concluding remarks?
Yeah, I want to be clear and not to say you need to say yes now, but that means that if I understand this discussion, for me it's a decision that the subgroup will handle or will become the review overseeing team for the future, and we will have to decide if we can do some parallel work within the review. I have no clear mind on that, but we will come back to you on that, and we start as soon as possible to find a reviewer and do the review. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much, Sebastian. And I see one more hand raised. Steve, please.
Thanks, Steve Del Bianco. Sebastian, in the SOAC Accountability Workstream 2 team, one of the things we have to look at is how to resolve conflicts that might arise within an SOAC and its accountability. I wanted to ask you, is it realistic to expect that our ombudsman would have sufficient resources and knowledge that they could help to resolve, say, a conflict that occurred within an ACNSO, like within the GNSO, if one particular individual or group felt that it wasn't that the accountability and transparency standards within the ACNSO were not being honored? Would the ombudsman be an appropriate place to go for help on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I think it's an interesting question, because in one end, if the office will have the resources. If he's not in this office, it will be somewhere else we will need to have. Then the question of the resources, it's not, from my point of view, a first question. Now, can he do that? I am sure, yes, it is in remit and his capacity. Then I really think that it's a good point. But taking into account your question, it reminds me that we have to find the way for all the subjects we are in connection between one subgroup to our ombuds subgroup, how we will deal that, not to delay your work also. That's a question I need to handle in the next few weeks, because I don't want, because of this review, that the all ATRT, Workstream 2 delay for 6 months. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And good follow-up question, Steve, indeed. And with that, I think we can adjourn for the coffee break, but not without having thanked Sebastian, particularly since the Ombudsman Group is now sort of a steering committee for the Ombudsman-related work that needs to be carried out in the next couple of months. So thank you for that, and thanks also for accepting that broadened mandate. Thank you. Okay, we're now going to have a 15-minute coffee break, and as you know, after the coffee break, we're going to have our discussion with Joran. So I would really like to ask you to be here at your desk on time so that we can make full use of the 1 hour that we have with him. Thanks so much, and let's stop the recording for the coffee break. Yes, please do. Can I ask everyone to get back to their seats? We're going to start momentarily. And I would also like to ask the rapporteurs for the transparency, for the ombudsman and the staff accountability sub-teams to join us at the table. Okay, can everyone please take their seats? We would like to start. We want to make the best use of the 1 hour that we have with Jöran. So again, can I ask the rapporteurs for the transparency sub-team, for the ombudsman sub-team, and the staff accountability sub-team to join us at the table? And I'm looking at Brenda, can we get the recording started again? Is it running? Okay, I see the thumbs are up, that's great. So welcome again to the next topic on the agenda of the CCWG face-to-face, and we are now going to have 1 hour with Jöran Mabi to discuss the interlink between his concept of the complaints office and our Workstream 2 work. So thanks very much, Jöran, for accepting the invitation to join us today. And Jöran, we have thought that it would be good for us to have three sections of this 1 hour, first of which would be your presentation of the idea of the complaints office so that we can better understand what your plans are. And then we've invited the rapporteurs of three of our Workstream 2 sub-teams, i.e. staff accountability, transparency, and the ombudsman, to the table to give you a brief overview of where they are, because these three topics are most closely linked to your idea, or are potentially linked to your activity there, so that you can better understand where these sub-teams are with their work and what they might need of you and ICANN to complete their work. And then as a third step, we should have a discussion with the whole group. I'm sure that there are a lot of questions. And we should also hopefully agree on some concrete next steps on how we can make sure that what you're doing, what our team is doing, is really a coherent project so that we're not doing redundant work or even have conflicting outcomes. So with that, I'd like to hand over to you to give us a brief overview of the complaints office idea. Thanks.
Thank you. And first of all, thank you very much for inviting me. This is kind of my startup session for the whole ICANN meeting, and what is more fun than to be here with you. Before I go into the, that was actually honestly meant. Before I kind of start with just the complaint officer, I want to take a step back and look a little bit about what you achieved through the after the decision with the new bylaws. With the new bylaws, some things have been sort of sharpened out slightly. And one of them is that the role of the community, the role of the board, and the role of the organization. And to take a step back, you could say that it's very clear that the community writes the policy and decides about the policies. And the community is defined without the ICANN, anyone working for ICANN organization. So to answer the question, if the members of my staff is a member of the ICANN Oregon community, the answer is actually no. And that's the way it should be. The second one is that the board has two roles in this. The first role is to instruct me, after advice, to go and implement policies. The other one is to be my overcoat, because, as you know, ICANN is also an organization which is based in California. My role, then, is twofolded. One of the roles is to support and facilitate the policy work that happens within the community. And the other role is to run the organization. I think that's a very good. The checks and balances that are built in the system, which I think is going to make the policy work easier for you in the community. And that also tells me that I'm, as I said, when we're in Finland, I'm not the CEO of ICANN. I'm not your CEO. I'm the CEO of the ICANN organization. And according to the bylaws, as you know, everybody who works in the ICANN organization actually reports to me. That means that I'm the most accountable person in the whole process. I'm the one who's responsible if something goes wrong, if you don't think that we proceed, if we don't do things well enough. In that context, I want to make it transparent about the things that doesn't work. I want to make sure that you know and I know things that you complain about what I do in my organization as a part of the accountability back to you as a community. So therefore, as many organizations have, you have someone, a central point where complaints comes in. We already handle complaints internally, but I want to improve the transparency of the complaints. So therefore, we're going to take all complaints into one person, and that person will publish all the complaints that comes in that has to do with the organization. And we will also publish the answers, recognizing if we do anything wrong, correcting the things that it makes if we do anything wrong, and we're going to be public about it. So for me, the Ombudsman, and being Swedish, where the whole word and the concept was invented, the Ombudsman handles whole of ICANN. Some part of that could be including the things I do as well, which I do accept. It also reports to the board, and the board can instruct me to do certain things. I think the discussion you're having about the Ombudsman is very, very important, because it is a very important function. In Swedish, the word Ombudsman really means to taking care of someone without a voice. And that is very, very important part of that role. That's a part of the kind of history of the Ombudsman from the Swedish perspective. But the complaint officer is one who handles the practical things. For instance, it could be things like, I heard rumors about reimbursements, invoicing, that conference calls hasn't worked, down to how have you actually done the implementation the right way you should have. So that is the real things what I'm looking for. You also addressed, and maybe you should take them later, but in the concept, you also asked me some other questions as well. And maybe we can come back to them. But this was just to give a frame on where we are in the process. So I see it as a complementary function to the Ombudsman. But it's very much in this sketch relating to the things that my people do within the ICANN organization. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jörgen. I'm not sure who wants to go first, Sebastian. So this is actually meant to be a very, very concise snapshot of what the sub-teams are doing and explaining to Jörgen what the interfaces between his initiative and the sub-teams are. So if I could ask all of you to keep your statements brief so that we have as much time as possible for discussion and interaction with Jörgen. Sebastian, please.
Thank you very much. As I am very concerned with the question of diversity, I need to raise here an issue of we seems to use words with not the same meaning. And it's part of the problem we are here. When I read your blog on the 4th of October 2016, you write twice organization. And for me, and I guess from other, since my participation of ICANN in ICANN, I am participating in the ICANN organization. And it's so true that a few years ago we were also calling the organization, or the corporation, if you wish, ICANN.org. Or ICANN.org was when we were supposed to talk about everybody. Then we have here a misleading word. You wanted to give a name to staff, and I can understand that. I have no problem with that. But using organization, you have taken a word used for other things and used for the all organizations. That means staff, board, and community participant, and so on and so forth. Then now that I realize that you are talking about a complaint officer who will take care of what is happening within what you call your organization, that means within staff or with staff, it's we can read it, or I can read it a little bit differently. But that's the first point. The second, it's you have the right to do what you think it's useful for ICANN and for the organization or for staff and hiring a complaints officer. But it was from our discussion within the subgroup of ombudsman a little bit strange that we are still defining how we want to evolve this role in having a new one created within staff without coordination. And it's where we stand also on that issue. And as I have the floor, I want to raise a third issue, and that's something we already face in this organization, sorry, in ICANN in general. It's where a new people is put. I just want to recall that a group we are supposed to deal with, it was not the complaints, but the question about domain names, were also under legal. And after a few months, it was thought that it was good to be outside of the legal. And frankly, if I have a complaint, the last place I will go is to go to legal first. That's the element we discuss in our group, and some of my personal point of view, the last one, for example, but I guess it gives you a feeling of where we are in thinking about that. Thank you.
Sebastian, thanks for this. I would like to give the other rapporteurs the opportunity to briefly speak to their sub-teams, and let me reemphasize that this is about presenting the work of the sub-teams and the links there might be to Joran's initiative. I know that there's a queue forming, and we will go to the queue afterwards. So, Michael, the floor is yours.
Hi. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Michael Karanikolas. I'm one of the co-rapporteurs for the transparency subgroup. My other co-rapporteur will be along in the afternoon. From a transparency perspective, I'll start by saying it's great to see a Swede who's represented here. Sweden had the you said you're from Sweden, right? Sweden had the world's first. Sure. Sweden had the world's first access to information law about 200 years ahead of the rest of us, so that's a good start. The transparency subgroup has been looking into three major areas. One is the documentary disclosure policy, the DIDP. The second is ICANN's proactive disclosure policies, what information is put out as a matter of course on the website. And the third is the rules around whistleblowers. So, you know, when I hear talk about a new complaints office or new review mechanisms, the connection that I immediately make with the subgroup's work is to the DIDP and specifically to mechanisms for reviewing DIDP responses that ICANN gives out. I think that there's certainly a need for a lot more clarity on how these review mechanisms work. I think that one of the things that I've been hearing is a need for a strong appeals process to have a proper reconsideration, particularly where requests for information is refused, and to make sure that it's an independent process, a robust process, preferably for something that has a de novo reconsideration of the decision-making that led into the refusal. And I would be very interested to see how this sort of a complaints mechanism might interact with that idea, or generally what kind of thoughts are there around ICANN's current process for reconsideration of refusals.
Thanks very much, Micah. Let's continue with Jordan.
Thanks, Thomas. Jordan Carter here, one of the two co-rapporteurs for the Staff Accountability Group. To my left, your right, Avery Doria is the other, and we're both going to make a couple of comments here. Jordan, I just want to say by saying it's great to have an ICANN CEO here listening and engaging with this group in an open way. That is a new and nice thing to see, so thank you for dedicating an hour to this morning. The staff accountability work had a relatively narrow scope, as agreed in Workstream 1. One part of it was to work with ICANN on a document that expresses the respective roles of the staff, the board, and the community. And the other was to get into the existing formal processes for staff accountability, for whether there's aspects of the code of conduct or performance management and so on that keep staff engaged with and accountable to the ICANN community. And all that is in the context of not falling off chairs and not trying to interfere, I think, with the management responsibility that you have as a CEO to hold staff to account and to be the responsible person who the board can hold responsible for how the organization performs. I guess we need access to information from inside the organization to do our work. We can't invent our own story about what the performance system is or about what documentation already exists. So I've submitted a list of questions through the accountability staff on that, which we will need some answers to. I think we're also interested in the group about your take on the culture of the organization. How do you want the staff to be in relation to the community? What's that? What's the vision that you have for that as a leader in the ICANN organization? Your own perspective and advocacy for an appropriate culture is really important. And I'll turn over to Avery for a couple of other questions that we've got.
Thank you. So, this is Avery speaking. So a couple of the questions. It's interesting when you talk about your people not being part of the community. I do believe they probably are part of the community when they go home at night. So there is a certain amount of confusion I have in dealing with that, especially since we have been talking over the last couple years about how that works. But one of the questions we have is on community-facing staff. You really have two kinds of staff. You have one that's the pure operational and one that's the community-facing. Now, how do we interact with that community-facing staff? And are there points of accountability other than you, or is there ways to work things out with staff that don't involve waiting until there's a complaint and going to a complaint person? So basically trying to understand the other points of accountability for dealing with issues before they become complaints, before they get that far. So that's one of the issues. The other one that we've got is we're a group talking about staff accountability, and yet we don't have any staff members dealing with the group. I mean, we have one that's a representative of, but we don't have any staff members participating as themselves as staff members dealing with these issues. And so one of the things that we came up with in the group is we felt that we need to come to you and ask for permission for them to participate. There are your people. So ask for permission for them to participate and whether it is even possible for them to participate safely without repercussion, so that if we got a staff member to come and participate in the group with us, we're talking about staff accountability after all, would they be able to talk to us honestly and openly without getting themselves in trouble with their bosses or their bosses' bosses? So those were the kinds of issues we have. It feels hard to talk about staff accountability without genuine staff members in the room. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Avery, and the other rapporteurs for sharing some insights in their current state of play with the sub-teams as well as the questions for Joran. And before we move to the queue, Joran, I would like to give you the opportunity to react to what you've heard so far. And by reaction, I mean you're not confined to you're not limited to just responding to the questions that you heard, but also please feel free to share any observations that you might have.
I think I'm here to answer as many questions as I can. And they're good questions. And I wanted to share with something that we're actually doing internally as well. Just on the word org, one of the reasons I'm doing this, and I've been speaking to a lot of the constituency leaders about this as well, is because one of the most important things for me is to have a diverse and engaged community, which means that we have to work to have new people on board. And we have a language sometimes within ICANN which sort of prohibits. When I meet new people coming in, they are swamped into acronyms, and that people talk about it because they understand the narrative. So what we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do, is to find a way of describing the different roles so make it easier for people coming in. You know what it is. So it's not intentionally I'm trying to do it only to clear out the roles and also to tell where the decision-making process actually lies. It's also to try to tell people coming in on the different roles. So it's a kind of a it's a try to get away. I even ask my team not to speak in acronyms all the time, because I'm trying to open up the language to have a diverse community and not scaring people coming in. So that's a part of it. Was the org the right thing? Probably not, but we haven't figured out anything else, because there is a systematic organization where people are employed and get salaries. I'm going to tap into something the new bylaws, the bylaws changes everything or nothing compared to how you look at them. What we really did, I don't know if anyone saw the fantastic intermission I had together with a guy called Ted Cruz, where I tried to explain to him that, you know, we are replacing one oversight with another one. And we're replacing the U.S. government with the community, and we built in checks and balances to do that. And I think those checks and balances are very valid, and it should be there. And the clarification of those roles are important. I mean, you have set in places like how the board should act, and you put in things that I should do. Accountability is an important part of that. But I also feel a responsibility that if something goes wrong in my organization, I'm the guy you should turn to. I think you want that. I think you want me to be able to go and say then fix something. There has been maybe a little bit of too much bubbles. We had Sebastian sort of said the JJ bubble, or the Akron bubble, or the David Olive bubble. And actually, they are connected. They are an organization. And I'm the one who actually holds those bubbles together. I'm going to ask one question, just because I have it here. The whistleblower function. We are now, after the decision, coming into a phase within the organization where we have to change some things we do. And one of the things we're saying is that we have to deserve the right to serve. We are in the facilitation of the community and of the board. We are actually in the service business. And one of the things we're doing right now, yesterday I went out internally and said we're going to do 5 different groups internally, because you know that culture doesn't change because I write it on a paper. Culture changes when you actually start working on it. So we're starting on 5 new projects internally. When the first one is actually ICANN organization culture and ethics. What does it mean to work for ICANN organization? What does it mean with ethics should we have? And how do we behave? And how do we behave in an environment where we are a serving environment? What is the ethics of it? Can we have 2 roles? No. We have to have one role, and we have to engage with my staff, with my people, to try to change that. And I do it at a bottom-up process, so I actually engage the staff in to talk about that. And they just give me an idea that along the line, maybe we should actually let you in and talk about with the people who's working on the culture and ethics internally, because you want to tap into that one. The other thing you kind of mentioned is what I call demand-driven outreach. One of the things that really makes possible going now is that we have to work together to have more people coming on board, and that we're going to do that. Sharing best practices, internal core knowledge training, and internal communication are some other things, which taps me into something else. Transparency is important. Communication exists when the receiver actually understands what we say. We are very good of disclosing things, but we are not very good of actually writing down the conclusion of what we've done and make that. We're not talking about we shouldn't do everything in public and open, but sometimes it's needed to write a narrative of why we're doing something. Because that's transparency, when the receiver, regardless of language skills, regardless of background, can actually understand how you ended up, for instance, with a decision. So we're starting a process, also with the board, also internally, how we can not only open up things, but also put it into... We're not taking anything away. We are still talking about... You could read what we say in the minutes. You can go through that. But also trying to figure out a way to be more transparent by actually giving a narrative. So, for instance, if there is a board resolution, you should, in my dream, be able to follow all the things that's happened before that board resolution, so you can actually tap into the different decisions that's going to do that. This is not the simplest of projects. That's a very big project going forward. But I think transparency is going to be very important. Just on a whistleblower function, in this narrative, we already decided that we're going to do it's going to be a part of the training we do. We do sexual harassment training. We do anti-corruption training internally for everybody who comes in. And we're going to add on a whistleblower training as well to get as well other trainings as well. So it would at least train people. You might think that I know what I am, and I love discussions. So far, I haven't fired anyone who talks back to me, not in my life. I think that in an organization where the people that work for me are just the only factory I have, the only competence I have is the people working for me. If I don't listen to them and let them engage with you, what purpose do I have? It's easy to say, but I don't have any... if they criticize me, what can I say? I try to do better. I don't always agree with them. I will not always agree with you, but that's the perspective I'll have. I just want to mention something about my staff as well. They're very committed and loyal people who voluntarily work for us. I have to provide to them to be able to provide to you a good working environment so they actually can feel joy of doing it. They're not machines. They are people, and we are all belonging on their passion and their knowledge. So one of the things we're doing right now, working internally with culture values, and also make sure that they can actually have a life when they're working, so we can be even better supporting you. And if you don't think we support you enough or we don't do things, you have people there that you can talk to, and I'm very happy for that. I know you have a lot of interactions. I don't want complaints, everything to be complaints, but I want to know if they are complaints so I can see the trends going for them. So I'm actually looking for when it comes to cooperation. I think I stopped there.
Let me just double check with the rapporteurs whether you get sufficient information for the time being or whether you have follow-up questions before we move to the queue. Ari?
Yeah, if I can. So if I understand correctly, any staff member that wants to participate in their groups has the ability to do so, and they would be safe in doing so, and that's one thing. And that the other, that the complaints is not a single point of access, as it sometimes sounds, but that interaction with staff about issues remains possible and that there are many points of interaction. Whether those can be called accountability or not, I'm still uncertain.
I mean, the question is said in such a way that is not resembling the way we run the organization, and we cannot run the organization, to be honest. We discussed this a little bit when we met the last time as well. I'm doing this to be able to aggregate the complaints so we know about them. Since I came on board, interactions with you, there are certain trends that about complaints. One of them has been travel another thing, I want to know so I can actually see that it's a real problem there. Invoicing, there's a lot of practical things. So I can go in and see this is the problem. And we're going to be, today they are not transparent to you. So see this as a service to you as well as me. The only thing we're going to take away is we're going to make it anonymous for the ones who complain, if they don't want to be seen, because we want to protect them. They should be able to complain without being seen.
So I guess you're on.
And to answer your questions, I haven't heard that anyone has come to me and said they would like to participate or said that they have been prohibited to participate in any group that we're doing.
Just maybe as a follow-up to Avery's first half of the question, so we can put on the record that you don't have any issue with staff participating and that this is with your blessing, basically. Because I think she wants sort of something on the record that encourages staff to be on the group and speak their minds.
If they're more, I don't know. I don't have any problem.
Great. So there's a long queue. And all of you have been patiently waiting for your opportunity to speak, and the first one is going to be Alan.
Thank you very much. In the interest of disclosure, I have said some of this to Jorn privately. The two issues that Sebastian raised, I think, are really trivial and really important. One is the use of the word organization, and I understand you said maybe we picked the wrong one, but I think it's really critical that you are the CEO of the corporation. The organization is a term that we have used forever to talk about everything, including the volunteers. And I think the perception is going to be very wrong and misunderstood if you keep using the word organization to be the corporation and the paid employees and contractors. That's number one. Number two, a similar thing on the reporting structure. As able as the legal group may be to support this function, there's a long history in ICANN of mistrust. There was a session on our agenda, which was a high-interest topic on essentially transparency of legal advice to the board. It seems to be transformed into another title and another topic. But due to the long history, whether it is the right group or not, from your perspective and their perspective, the optics of it are very bad. Thank you.
Yeah, please.
The word org has been used and been blessed. I've been asking for alternatives, and everybody comes back that maybe there is not a good word for it. And let's, if you understand, there is no hidden agenda here. It's a trial of clarification, and we will always pick something. I learned that when I pick anything, there will always be different opinions on it, so maybe we will pick something and we can live with it. I want to point something out which I think is important when it comes to the bubbles, the JJ bubble, Akron bubbles. There's always been a CEO, and the CEO has always made decisions. And sometimes those decisions, or a board has made the decisions, and sometimes it's not always been clear who's taking those decisions. One of the reasons I'm saying the way I'm saying it is because I want you to know that I'm accountable to you. And it's not the Akron bubble, it's not the JJ bubble, it's not the David Olive bubble or anything else. Because I want to come back next time we have this meeting when I've done mistakes or my organization mistakes, and I should sit here and answer those questions regardless where it happens in my organization. Everybody reports to me. In the end, everybody reports to me. It doesn't mean that you don't have the right to do interaction and everything has to go through me. That's not the thing. The thing is that I'm trying to be responsible for what we do. And I think that if we can do that together, we will go, regardless of the history or regardless of what we do. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next in line is Robin. Robin Gross.
Hi, this is Robin Gross for the record. I wanted to also talk about this new complaints officer position that's been created for the general counsel. The new CEO may not be aware of this, but one of the main issues that we worked on in Workstream 1 was to try to take some of these issues out of the hands of the legal department. There's recognition that the lawyers the legal department have a legal obligation, have a fiduciary duty under the law to protect the organization. So, for example, when we were dealing with the reconsideration request issue in Workstream 1, the overwhelming view, both of the members of the CCWG and also in the public comment forum, was that we needed to remove the ICANN legal department from making the initial evaluations of reconsideration requests and these kinds of issues because of that conflict of interest that the legal department has with respect to representing the organization and then providing a fair adjudication or evaluation of the issue. So it seems unfortunate, and maybe you weren't aware of this, but it seems like you are now taking what the CCWG did in Workstream 1 and entirely reversing it by creating this complaints officer position and giving it to the general counsel's office to deal with. So it seems like you're sort of undoing the work that we did in Workstream 1, and maybe you just weren't aware of the comments that we received on this issue, the overwhelming concern that we need to remove these kinds of evaluations from the legal department and into more objective hands that don't have a legal obligation to protect the organization. So I think you may want to rethink that that position as you become aware of what we did in Workstream 1 and the concerns that were overwhelmingly raised in Workstream 1 regarding the legal departments. Thank you.
For once, I'm well aware of what happened in Workstream 1, and I actually failed to see the connection between what I'm asking the complaint officer to do, because it doesn't go together. And I can see in your facial expression that I have to explain myself. We're talking about where my staff, when there is an area for complaints of my staff, it's got nothing to do with the processes. And if we misbehave in the process, that's why I would like you to have the complaints. If we don't follow the process, that's why I want to have the complaints. So we're not, it's not a question about we intervening in something else, because the only power this person has is the power that is given by me, and the only power I have is the one that's given by the board, which is standard in the bylaws. So there's no way for me to intervene with this person in anything else that has to do how people report to me. And I'm also responsible for what the legal departments are doing as well as I'm responsible for what David Olive is doing. So if you think I cannot create more powers than I already have, I can only use the ones I already have. So I can't go outside the scope of this. Thank you.
If I could just quickly follow up. I can explain the connection that you don't see. It is that these kinds of issues need to be evaluated by hands or people who are not legally obligated to protect the organization. We need more neutrality, more fairness, if you will, to the community. There is a legal obligation by the general counsel to protect the organization. So when they give you the initial evaluation, which, yes, you're free to dismiss or not, there is concern within the community that evaluation that you're given is one-sided, and that's the part where we need for you to take those initial evaluations out of the hands of somebody who has a conflict of interest with respect to protecting the organization.
With that, just to have a dialogue about it, with that, I also have a conflict of interest, because according to California law, I also have that, together with all my officers. It's also that the board has appointed certain officers. We all have to follow the law and protect the organization. But we also have to protect the bylaws, because the bylaws are the ones that actually runs our organization as well. It's in the bylaws that defines. The code book for us is all, and that goes for everybody. The way they run the organization is through the bylaws.
Thanks very much. I guess this is an area that we might need to follow up on offline or continue the conversation elsewhere. I see Fiona's hand is up. Fiona, not sure where you're sitting. Ah, over there. Fiona, please.
Thank you very much. Fiona Sanga for the record. Thanks, Johan, for sharing with us your views on
what you do within ICANN. I've been in ICANN for a while, maybe shorter than most of everyone else here. And I'm just thinking, as you redefine organization, to someone out there who's not part of ICANN, so what are we telling them ICANN is? If the organization is only staff, then where does the community come in? And then how do we, then who are we? As in, to then an external party, what is ICANN? If we can look at it like, I'm looking at it maybe from a very simple, very basic, very naive and an experienced perspective, because I run a membership-based entity that serves the technical community in Kenya, and we have the community that gives us input in terms of our policies and everything else that we do, and then we have the secretariat, who's the staff. And when we talk about TESPOC, we talk about everything together. TESPOC as an organization cannot exist without our community and without the staff. We are sort of like getting into a situation where we're trying to say we can separate the community and the staff within this organization. So then the organization becomes the staff, and then there is the community hanging somewhere. And we have bylaws, and our bylaws tie to the community and parts of the community and how those interact with the secretariat. I call it the secretariat because that is what I really see the function of the people who are paid to ensure that what we need done is done. In the group of, as we are working on mechanisms for diversity, the one thing that is a big challenge then is, so what are we going to be looking at in terms of mechanisms that would support diversity within ICANN? Are we looking at diversity within the secretariat, within the... If it's ICANN as an organization, it's very clear because we'll say it's staff, it's board, it's all the community, it becomes clear. But when you start breaking it down, then I'm thinking, okay, so we decompartmentalize and have mechanisms for staff, mechanisms for community, and then the board who are the bridge in between. For purposes of keeping things simple, sometimes I think we try to make things clear and we overcomplicate in trying to make things clear. I think it's important that we keep things simple enough so that everybody can understand, especially because ICANN brings together a number of entities who are not speakers of English. And because we are not native English speakers, it's important that we use terminology that is easy to understand and easy to explain. Because it becomes very difficult for me to go back and start explaining, oh, ICANN organization is this. Then I'll be asked, and what is the community? So what role does the community have to play? ICANN, as an entity, as an organization, is both the staff, the community, and everyone who comes in. And if we can maintain that understanding we've had over the years, it makes it very simple and easy for us to be able to explain to entities who want to come into ICANN what ICANN is all about. Because now I'm getting a bit confused on what is ICANN.
Thank you. You're right. It is confusing. It's extremely confusing. And let me know, I've been confused since I started. For me, ICANN is the whole thing. It's the community, the board, and what I call the organization, for right or wrong. Why do I say that? Because in the bylaws, they are actually defined to do different things. And we went down the road, secretariat, by the way, and then someone said, you run the L server as well. So it kind of, you know, we do several things. We have a billing machine. Is that part of the community or is it something else? So we actually say within what we do, we are a secretariat for the community. But I think that, and one of the reasons, to be personal with you, one of the reasons I took this job was when I spent some time with the board, oh yeah, it's almost a year ago now, when I really tried to nail down, what is my role? What am I supposed to do? And funny enough, on this next board meeting we're having this week, the end result of that will come as a resolution where the CEO and board, there's a paper now what I'm supposed to do and my responsibilities. That's never existed before. And you were able to, it's going to be a living document. So I think going back to it, for me, ICANN is all of us. Because it's built around three different things. The community writes the policies and decides upon them. And that's the center of gravity of ICANN. ICANN is not the center of gravity of Internet. We also have our dear friends in the number community and the protocol community to belong us, and everybody else. That's a whole ecosystem. We have our role. And what I intentionally is trying to do is actually to push what the community's responsibilities are and say that these are not my policy. My job in this respect is to serve you. You might not think that, okay, what is he coming from? What is the hidden? That is what I'm telling internally. That's what I'm saying to the board. That is what I think my job is. I also have some other operational things to do. In this, I'm facilitating the policy work. And I use the word felicitation very important because it doesn't mean that I actually intervene in the policy-making process. In the implementation, there are things we have to do, and I think we have to improve some of that. There's a lot of things we need to improve. But the basic role are defined in the bylaws, and I'm very happy about it. When it comes to diversity in different languages, I'm not a native English language user either, which you probably hear sometimes. And we need to be much better when it comes to supporting different... You know, I can do what I can, and I'm reaching now, right now, for the first time, we're actually reporting to the board about... gender diversity within the organization, so I actually know how many people working for me, which gender they have, defined by two. And I think that's going to be even more important working together with the community because it's going to be demand-driven. You also have to tell us where we can support you better, how do we make a diverse and engaged community going forward? You have to help me to tell me what I'm supposed to do in that. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Next in line is Tijani. I'm sorry. I skipped Kavus unintentionally. Kavus, please take the floor.
No problem. Intentional only this. I know that why he was in the queue. Thank you very much. It was not intentional. Yes. Most of the things that I wanted to say is already in the chat. Look at that one. But I think I am surprised of the degree of distrust that some people express and mixing up the issue of diversity, transparency, and accountability. Transparency of the work being done and its continued enhancement, in particular involving the staff into day-to-day operation to express their views and respect what they said to the extent that they are applicable to the work and to get benefit of their experience is supported, is no problem. What I have the problem is dual responsibility and dual accountability. A staff could not be accountable on one hand on the CEO and the other hand to the community. We break totally the hierarchy. A staff may be in doubt that why I should be accountable to the CEO or to my supervisor. I am accountable to the community. And then who is the community? How the community could implement that accountability? And if they do so, and it's implementable, they bypass the CEO and the entire hierarchy of the situation. You create an unhealthy organization in the world. We should be very, very careful what we are doing. The community is not to go to the micromanagement of the ICANN. The community gives general guidelines and in a proper order. The staff are accountable to the CEO and say you're accountable to the board and as far as it is mentioned in the bylaw, accountable to the community. But staff shall not be accountable to the community at all because, first of all, they break the management hierarchy and, second, it is totally unimplementable if the community wants to ensure that the accountability of staff is implemented. We should be very, very careful. And the remaining part, what I have to say, I already told in the chat. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kavuz. Yaron, would you like to respond to that?
One of the reasons why you have, and thank you very much, one of the reasons why you have a hierarchical organization is so you can have the ability to delegate. But you can only delegate things to do, you cannot delegate responsibility. So, and often I've been in managers for too many years probably, but I always think that it's important that the people who works for me has the ability and the mandate to perform their work they have, because usually they're much better than doing it than I doing it anyway. So by trying to make it a little bit clearer for the people working for me, it's actually to be able to have the mandate, so they don't have to go back and ask me for any single question. That goes anything from budget, which you decide, but also how we actually do things. And that's why you actually have a hierarchical organization, so you can say that this is your responsibility going forward. But I also think, and I hope, that you want to hold me accountable, that next time we sit here, and we can make this the tradition if you want to, I'd love to come back, and we can go back and you can point to me things that I have to improve or have to do different, or I can explain what we've actually done, like I've been doing now. But I have to agree with the sense that I'm trying to run an organization with a purpose, and the purpose to a lot of extent is to support the community. And that's the kind of position I'm taking on this. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Now it's your turn, Tijani. Sorry for that.
Thank you very much, Thomas. First of all, I would like to thank you very much, Johan, for your project of creating a complaint bureau. Even if, first, I agree with all the comments made about your use of the word organization to be the group of people paid by ICANN. I heard your answers, and I still think that we have to define better the words so that they are not used for several meanings. Second, I think that this bureau shouldn't be part of the legal department. And I will explain why. And third, I agree with Avery that it shouldn't be a complaint bureau. It might be an issue bureau or something like this, because we need to address things before they become complaints. So why I love your initiative? I like it because you are defining well things, and this is very important. Staff is staff when they are working with us. At home, yes, they are part of the community, but here they are staff, and they have duties, they have responsibilities, and I think that your initiative is to have a channel of communication with the community so that you know what are the concerns of the community. And that's why I think that it shouldn't be part of the legal department. We may go to this office to tell you how you can help us better. Why it should be in the legal department in this case. So I say again that it is a very good initiative, but we have to consider all those points before doing it. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Before I give the opportunity to Jan to respond, I see that there are audio issues in the Adobe room again. I hope that Fazi in particular can hear this. She says, no sound again, I'm going to give up. I don't want you to give up. If there are issues and if you can't dial in, please do indicate in the chat, and I hope that I can get you a dial out, right? So we will try to make that happen so that we don't lose you attending these sessions. So Yoram, please, if you want to respond to Tijani.
Thank you. Trust is something that you earn. That's not something that you just get. And you have no reason to trust me at all because I haven't proven myself yet. I'm well aware of that. I can only hope that over time and being consistent in what I do, I will do mistakes. I will do things that you don't think is the smartest thing, or I could have done them differently. I hope that I can have your trust, even if you don't always agree. I hope that over time we will come up past those things. I give you one promise, is that I will not do anything. I don't do anything in back rooms or anything. Anything I will do will be transparent to you, because that's what I see, or to the board. over time, I hope that some of that mistrust will disappear, and I will hopefully gain your trust. I don't expect that to happen over free meetings or anything else. I have nothing else in mind than to try to improve how I support the community, because that's the job I took. I also have the job to make sure that I have a good and competent staff that can support you. You can also have a life, because you want them to be passionate, you want them to be engaged, you want them to be able to give you support, and therefore I have to be able to attract good people. I'm going to do things that you may don't like, but I will come here every time and I will talk to you about them, and maybe you will see my reasoning and maybe not. How I set up my organization, how I communicate internally. So hopefully over time we will come back and have those discussions. Thank you.
Thanks, Joran. Last speaker is going to be Greg, please.
Thank you, Thomas, and thank you, Joran, for joining us here. Greg Shatton, for the record. Two comments, which build on a number of the comments you've heard before, may agree with some and disagree with others. First, I actually think staff accountability may be the most important thing that this group can look at, because the staff does so much of the day-to-day work of the organization, and really so much of the day-to-day work for the community if things are going well, or to the community if they're not going as well. So that relationship, which often works very well and sometimes doesn't, is critical to the overall sort of tripartite functioning of ICANN, the ecosystem. I only regret that I haven't spent more time on staff accountability working group. It's one of the seven that I'm signed up to be a member of, and apologize for not being an active one. So I do want to, you know, perhaps disagree with some that have said that staff accountability shouldn't be on our watch. Very much important. Understanding they also have to be accountable to the organization for which they work, but the organization as a whole needs to be accountable to the community, because that's why we're in this room in the first place. Secondly, with regard to the complaints officer, I think there's a lot of backstory here, and the ICANN legal staff and the GC, for whom I have a great deal of respect as fellow attorneys, but on the other hand, their role has often been seen as protecting ICANN from the community, and thus putting the complaints officer under the defender of the faith seems to be a less than optimal fit. Ideally, it'd be somebody who is under no such umbrella. It's a different role than the ombudsman, but having it be a role that kind of sits bureaucratically within an organization that has often been seen as the defender of fortress ICANN, with the community on the outside of the fortress walls, not on the inside, I think, creates a not the right framework and starting point for that to be seen as an office that will deal with complaints without fear or favor. Thank you.
Joran, please.
One of the reasons why we started talking about this was actually a blog from you, so feel partly responsible for the what I call the Trinity, where we tried to explain. It was an excellent blog, which I read very early. But if you want me to be responsible, I seem to coming back to that, and earn your trust over time, I also have to set up things the way I think are needed and doing it at a given point in time within my organization. And that is for practical reasons, because if I would not do that, I will not be accountable and responsible for the whole thing. And that is the way. I know there is history, there is a lot of history everywhere, and you may or may not agree. But give me the benefit of the doubt, and see how it works. And we can come back in a year and see if the discussion goes. And we can see. And if I'm wrong, I'm going to be happily telling you I've been wrong. I know that I do mistakes, and I will correct them if I can. But could I say something just to point this out as well? One of the most important reasons I think we have going forward is actually the, and you can check this with my staff, I don't want us to try to solve problems that is not ours. And I could agree with you that sometimes my team, my staff, has been trying to solve issues that is not ours, especially the implementation process. And I'm actually telling and instructing my whole my team that we're going to be neutral in implementation process. The things that the community has to sort out, we can start working with them and try to support them, but if it doesn't work out, we're going to give it back to the board, who then can engage with the community how to sort those things out. And I know that could be seen as a change of direction, but it, and I think it's very clear. And that's why one of those intersections is going to be very, very important going forward. I'm having a speech with my whole team here, and the instruction I'm giving them is to be neutral. That's a culture change, maybe, and that is because we've done it for the best of courses. But I think it's important to recognize that, especially now with the new bylaws, the community are responsible for the policies, and we should make sure that that's where the policy-making process happens. And I would be, if anyone of my team engages differently, please let me know. Thank you.
Thanks very much. We've run out of time, so I'd really like to take stock now and hopefully agree on next steps. Firstly, can I make it an action item for staff to copy the chat history of this session and make it available to Joran? Because Joran, you haven't seen this now, but there has been a very vivid discussion in the background on the benefits and the issues there might be with the complaints office and the relation to ICANN Legal. And maybe you can clear one thing for this group, and that is whether the complaints office has a decision-making function or whether it's merely a collecting function for reports that are coming in.
Oh, it's going to be a scale. Simple things should be addressed directly by the complaint officer. If there are structural things that we have to address for some reason or investments I have to do, it will end up with me. That's the way it happens. So, coming back to what you said, which is very, very important, we're not trying to add a layer on complexity. We're trying to aggregate so we have a visibility on complaints coming in so we can actually handle them. And if I see trends about them, and sometimes you have to go structural changes to make a trend, and I think most organizations I've worked in ever have had this kind of complaint department for the stakeholders engaged in it. I don't use the word customers because I don't think we are a customer at all. We are doing something completely different. But I want to know so I can aggregate and know what to do with it. But if there are simple problems that could be solved, I delegate those. More structured ones end up with me. And sometimes, even if they are bigger, they're going to end up with the board or maybe in the budget, which is taken by the community.
But then I guess there are a couple of follow-up questions with respect to the role of ICANN Legal that we might need to discuss more. And what if a complaint is about ICANN Legal and ICANN Legal itself making a determination on the complaint? So there are potential conflict of interest issues?
All complaints that comes in will be public and will be put on the web page. All complaints.
Okay.
So there is no way no one can hide anything. All complaints will be published. And we will take away the names of the complaint error. What is the word for that?
Complainant.
Complainant.
I'm not a native. That's my Swinglish coming in. Sorry. So there's going to be total transparency on the questions coming in.
I guess the underlying fear, that at least that's what I sense from the comments that have been made, is that, you know, the hierarchical structure and the fact that this is with ICANN Legal may lead to a situation where people do not complain because we have these other mechanisms in place as well. And that's maybe worthwhile discussing as well. You said that you don't want acronyms, you want plain language. But with, you know, your new board initiatives on the ethics for staff, with the
request for reconsideration with the Ombudsman, with the IRP, with the Complaints Office, we might need to set up tutorials for people on how to complain because they might not understand what competencies there are and what the limitations of these functions are. So that's for sure worthwhile discussing more. In practical terms, there were a couple of questions from the Staff Accountability Subteam to obtain some information. Can you give us an indication of the time that you need to get that information to us?
I don't know the answer, so I'm looking at Teresa.
Apologies, thank you. Yes, we received those late last week, and we'll be looking at early December, so we'll get those turned around as quickly as we can.
Okay, awesome. And I guess with respect to the different functions that I tried to list in my previous statement, I think it would be beneficial for us to interact with you or one of your team in between meetings. We certainly do appreciate that you are not sufficiently deterred from this group that you actually want to come back, but I think we would be well advised to liaise between those sessions in order to clarify any issues that might be and also flesh out the answers to the questions more.
I'm happy to do that. No problem.
So we will follow up with you, and you know, as the case may be, you will certainly delegate this to your team members as appropriate. So that's been great. We went into overtime for 6 minutes, so you've been very gracious with your time, Joran. I think everyone will agree that this was a very interesting and fruitful discussion. Certainly we couldn't remove all the concerns or answer all the questions, but I guess it's an excellent starting point for our work in this important field. So thanks so much, Joran. Would you like to make any final remarks?
No, thank you. I'm looking forward to coming back to you, and I think your questions are very wise because they show something to me which I think is important and dear to my heart. You actually care about the people working for me, which is very important. We can have made different views on how to solve that, but we all know that without the people, there's words in the staff or the org, whatever you want to use, and maybe, you know, have. You are so welcome to come up with a better name that you all agree upon. We've been trying. I spoke to 21 consistency leaders, and they all said, yeah, there should be a better name. Yeah, and they were all voted down somewhere. So, I'm not married to that word. Anyway, thank you very much for inviting me, and thank you for having me, and thank you for taking time from you. Bye.
Thanks very much, Joran. So let's move to the next session before we have the lunch break, and I can release the rapporteurs for all the sub-teams from this table except for SOAC Accountability, whom I'd like to invite to the table. We're going to discuss the SOAC Accountability work and questions as well. So SOAC Accountability rapporteurs, Cheryl. No, take your time. Take your time. And Steve? Am I looking at the wrong version of the agenda? So, staff, you need to help me with this. Familiar faces at this table, Cheryl and Steve, thanks so much for joining us for the SOAC accountability discussion. And I'm not sure who of you is going to speak first. Is it going to be you, Cheryl, or?
Oh, might as well get us started, I suppose.
Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Thomas. Cheryl Langdon all for the record, and hopefully those people who've had problems, particularly Fawzi, one of our co-rapporteurs, with the Adobe Connect rooms have now managed to get dial-ins, because we would very much like to have today's chat on the work from our topic, which is accountability of the support organisations and the advisory committees, as interactive and as open and, of course, as inclusive as possible. So we will be watching the Adobe Connect room. If you are just on a audio in. In other words, we've given you a dial out or you've dialed in and you are unable to put your hand up in the Adobe Connect room for whatever technical reason, feel free to interrupt in a pause and we will put you in the queue. But under normal circumstances, as usual, we will run the queue, providing my glasses can see the fine print on the tiny little tablet I'm having to use, because I'm having connection problems here today. We will take everybody in good order. If needs be, because we only have a very short amount of time, we will limit the amount of time for interventions, and I would ask that people only make a single intervention per topic unless we have the time available. I'd like to draw your attention to our update for the community, which is in the slide being shared in the Adobe Connect room, and it shows that we are currently running at around 35% of our work in progress. We had hoped to be further progressed than this, but like many of the topics, this comes into the best laid plans of, and we have been unable to get as far along in our four specific tracks as identified in this document, the first track being effectiveness, the second track being a discussion on an accountability round table, which really should also be seen as any form of mutual accountability or not. And I'd love the focus to change without making it more difficult for me to see. Thank you very much. Track three is the primary part of our work that we will be continuing on with, which is preparing a detailed working plan and enhancing the SO and AC accountability. And in this, we have started with the preparation of questions, which we are about to speak to, which goes out to the ACs and the SOs, hopefully in short order. And track four, which is another very important part of our work, which is mandated, as was the discussion of the any mutual accountability, is to assess whether or not the IRP would also be applicable to SO and AC activities. So I said I'd get us started, but I'm now going to call upon Steve, my fellow co-chair, to help us continue. Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Cheryl. We'll be presenting for second reading a series of questions that are necessary for us to do the work that's in track three. But before we do that, just a brief word, it's tracks 2, 3, and 4 for this group were dictated by the bylaws that created this Workstream 2 project. That is to say, we were told to evaluate the feasibility of a mutual accountability roundtable. I would report that I believe the chances of that being seen as feasible and desirable, probably not good right now.
Minuscule.
Track three, we've got to do it. That's the key to our work, and the questions will help us to get it done. With respect to track four, the IRP is a very heavyweight mechanism, expensive mechanism for remedying things that might happen to an individual or organization who's having trouble getting into or getting elected or having their views considered within an SO or AC, and that is one of the reasons I asked Sebastian this morning about whether the Ombudsman can be relied upon as a resource that would have access to assisting to the accountability issues within an AC and SO. Let me say just a word about track one. Where did that come from, effectiveness? Our work in the SOAC accountability took a hard look at the fact that the bylaws require that every AC and SO, with an asterisk for the GAC, that every SO and AC periodically do reviews of its organization, and ICANN contracts with an outside firm to perform the reviews. And for every one of us, except the GAC, that review is supposed to look at, quote, whether any change in structure or operations is desirable to improve its effectiveness. So a number of you, since you all belong in ACs and SOs, have had your effectiveness evaluated without any clue as to what the word effectiveness means. So our SO and AC set up track one to say that can we explore what it means to be effective as an AC and SO serving your designated community. That's where that track came from. We haven't done too much work on it yet, but believe me, if we don't do anything about it, then you'll continue to confront every few years, you'll continue to confront, well, what does effectiveness mean when ICANN hires its outside consulting firm to see whether the CCNSO or the ALAC or the GNSO need to change their structure to be effective? So we'll do our best to take a look at it, but I don't know whether we'll get anything out of it. Cheryl, I guess we should then move to second reading on the questions we think we need for track three. And staff, if you can bring up those questions. We did one reading on this previously because the bylaws charged us to review and then recommend improvements for accountability in the SO and AC level. And to do that properly, we wanted to make sure we knew what it is that you as ACs and SOs hold yourselves to with respect to accountability. And so these questions, which have been circulated before, gives a little bit of preamble to describe what it is the SO and AC accountability group is doing. And then take a look at the questions. If you'll scroll up a little bit to the questions. Thank you. A little bit higher so that just the questions are on the screen, if you could. Brenda? Thank you. Great. So the first thing we said is that the designated community, all we did was repeat from the bylaws what the designated community for each of the ACs and SOs is, because the ACs and SOs are creatures of the bylaws. And as such, what do the bylaws say that your designated community is? And we simply listed that out. And then if you scroll higher, Brenda, thank you, we ask you, what is your interpretation of that? For example, do you view it more broadly or narrowly than the bylaws? This is an opportunity for the ACs and SOs to explain that we see it a little bit differently, and we'd like to hear about that. And then we ask, please, just point us to the resources, which may or may not be published online. They may not even be in writing. Point us to your procedures that you use to do outreach to that target community, how you allow them to participate, how you allow them to join, to get elected, to make their views known, transparency mechanisms, and then were these policies updated recently? All right, and then finally, challenging or appealing. Do you have mechanisms for challenge or appeal? And if you don't, that's fine. It may just be that it goes to the ombudsman, which is part of the discussion we had with Sebastian this morning. And then if any of your policies were unwritten, we ask them to please describe to the extent that you can and get them back to the SO and AC team. Now, we also note earlier on that if a group like the GNSO has several subgroups within it, we're inviting the GNSO leaders to push the same set of questions down to the business constituency, the IPC, the non-commercial users constituency, and push it down to see whether they would want to provide answers as well. So in an ideal world, all of these documents would be instantly available. They're not. And if staff had more resources, I'm sure that the staff papers that were done for Workstream 2 would have dived into and given us the answers. Staff didn't have the resources to do that. So we are faced with, we're faced with the task of asking the rest of CCWG plenary to allow us to send these questions on behalf of the CCWG to the SO and AC leaders. Rachel?
Thanks, G. Yes, that's exactly what we're asking you to consider today, and this will be an opportunity for any fine-tuning, with the accent on the term fine-tuning, on what we've presented. Yes, they are very general, and yes, we are asking for self-assessment, but to be honest, that's okay. It is absolutely up to each AC and SO to decide how it wishes to deal with these very general self-reporting questions, and indeed if they wish to provide us with any other information, how they deal with it internally is absolutely up to them. Are these questions perfect? No, but they are time critical. And the reason they're time critical, ladies and gentlemen, is because this gathering here is an opportunity for these questions, with your permission, to at least be socialised with the advisory committee and support organisation leadership. If we had run our timetable in a perfect world, these would have been distributed before this point in our proceedings. That did not happen, so we are seeking now final deliberations, final reading, and with your support, plenary, sending out these questions literally by lunchtime today if we possibly could.
I'd like to just ask if Fawzi has an open line. Is there anything, Fawzi, now you'd like to add as one of our rapporteurs testing the system here? Fawzi?
Fawzi has indicated in the chat that she doesn't have anything to add.
Fantastic. Thank you. And the fine print is so small, Fawzi, I have no way to find out what you've written in chat. I'll look at it in a moment. In that case, I'd like to put it to the floor that these questions are now open. And perhaps, Brenda, you might want to just scroll back to the beginning, or do you have a question from... looks like, Brenda, you've got a question from the list. Go ahead, Brenda.
I do have a question from David McCauley. He asks, how long will the SOACs have to answer the questions?
Cheryl Langdonor, for the record again, noting that the ACs and the SOs will be engaged in a lot of business during this meeting, we would like to give them probably around the 21 to 38 or 28 to 30 days after this meeting closes. Perfectly, we would like to have something in the early December, but not to mid-December timeline. So 30 days after we get back from this Hyderabad meeting.
Thanks very much, Cheryl and Steve, for the presentation. And we have a queue. If you make your interventions, can I just remind you that this is the second reading of questions that you know for quite a while. So I think we can only accept minor tweaks. So we can't reopen that debate entirely. But the goal is to actually close this off during this session so that we can send the questions to the SONACs. First in line is Cavus, please.
Thank you very much. I think some of the question may be difficult to answer within that time limit, and in particular if there are questions of substance. The first one is one of those. What is your interpretation of designated community defined in the bylaw and so on and so forth? Are you inviting the SONAC to go and to analyze the bylaw and express their legal views with respect to the validity or otherwise of the way that this community has been designated, has been described in the bylaw? I don't think that would work to ask that question. It does not help. Maybe the remaining part of the question, what is your view about the extent to which that community is composed or is meant is okay, i.e., for instance, is the GAC only those people who are attending the meeting or the entire member of the GAC or beyond that? That may be, but not what is your interpretation. You do not ask the SONAC to make any interpretations of the bylaw. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Fiona?
My comment is, I think that these are the questions that have been asked are very important and important for the different supporting organizations and advisory councils to be able to then begin to think of the different accountability mechanisms that they need to put in place, because they are fundamental in ensuring that the SEs and SOs are accountable to the entities that they claim to represent. I choose to differ a bit with Cavus. I think the first question is very important in terms of the respective SOs and SEs confirming, for starters, that the way they are described or we summarize them is correct as one of the designated communities, and I think that is what this is trying to achieve, which is helpful in terms of ensuring that the SOs, we are on the same page with the SOs and SEs on who they are or who we claim they are, as well as what accountability mechanisms that they have in place. So I think I would support this moving forward.
Thanks very much, Fiona. And just for your information, I suggest that we collect the input that we receive, and then the rapporteurs will get an opportunity to respond. Jan.
Yeah, thanks, Jan Schulte. Really good questions. I think really, really well put together. Just one dimension of accountability that I don't see as clearly is about evaluation, so any review processes that are practiced. I see the transparency dimension, I see the participation consultation dimension, I see the review and complaints dimension. I don't see the review, the complaints dimension, I don't see the review evaluation dimension in there.
Thanks very much, Jan. Ellen?
Thank you. As we've been going over these a number of times, we've regularly said that the words may not apply. We are asking for interpretation, and I think the overall questions need to have the covering envelope of, if the questions don't quite apply to you, then modify them as necessary to give your best answer. The definitions that we're using don't apply in some of the cases. Each of the SOs and ACs are very unique. So with our own knowledge that they're not perfect, let's just make sure that we've conveyed that when we go forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chela and Steve, you've heard a couple of points. Who wants to go first reacting to that?
A real quick reaction. Jan, the question saying mechanisms for challenging or appealing decisions is our attempt to learn to what extent the ACs and SOs have a challenge and appeal mechanism, how they would handle complaints from somebody in the designated community who can't get in or can't get elected or won't be allowed to join, can't get the reviews considered. So that aspect is there. The word review isn't in here, since the reviews of the ACs and SOs, the review of their accountability, occurs because the bylaws dictate it. And those reviews are not run by the ACNSO. They're run by ICANN board and management, who hires a third party to come in and do a review. So I don't see the reviews as being relevant to this set of questions.
Can I just come back on that directly? It just would be to ask the groups whether they're doing anything else. They may be doing other things, and then it's good to know, and one might learn between the SOs and ACs what they're actually doing.
Chair.
Thank you, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, for the record, and thanks for that, Jan and Steve, because I made the note that we need to ask any internal or other activities, and I think if that's the case, then we've rounded that off a little bit more. So I take that as fine-tuning, and we will address that. For Cavus, I thought that we were fairly careful, and if we could just roll now, Brenda, up to seeing the first question, please, on screen. We were fairly careful to not suggest by these defined terms out of the bylaws that we weren't asking the designated communities to reconsider or to reassess. We were simply providing this designated community definitions as a reference point. So if it's not clear to the ACs and the SOs that these outlines from the bylaws are only a reference point, and that our question is to ask what interpretation they have, what belief they have, is their designated community, should it be different to exactly as defined? So we felt to simply say, what do you define your designated community to be, a little too open, so we were providing the bylaw excerpt as a reference point. If that isn't clear, and you can let us know in the chat, please, and I'd really love, for example, some feedback from the other support organisations as well. If that's not clear, then we can certainly put something in the preamble to make it clear that that is what we're trying to do. So hopefully that takes care of that point, because we're not asking to review bylaws. That is an entirely different matter and one that would have huge time constraints. Going to Alan, again, this is something that we could add to a preamble or perhaps a covering note, so that we can say, while we recognise that not everything we ask will be applicable to all support organisations and advisory committees, it would be appreciated if you can note where this is not the case or if there is additional information for us to make. So I think that will round that off. And then in terms of Fiona, I didn't think you had a particular update for us to do. I think what you were saying is that it is important that we have this self-interpretation of the rules. So thank you for the support. With that, I think we've covered that group off. Thank you.
Very much. While I had closed the queue earlier, we still have a couple of minutes left in the session, so we can gladly hear Izumi and Jan.
Izumi Okutani from the ASO. I agree with the suggested way forward, including how this designated community section is defined. That I think it makes it factual that we stick to the definition in the bylaws, so support from this, and I observe no concerns regarding the question. I totally would like to support the comment made by Fiona that the review should come from the community, it shouldn't come from the CCWG being enforced. Also want to support Alan's point that each of the communities are different, and I do want to highlight a bit of a difference in the ASO. I think there's a talk about how each of the SOs and AC do the outreach for the wider group. It's actually the other way around for the ASO. We already have five regional communities, and these communities actually elect the members of the ASO-AC. So we certainly would work on describing that, and it's a bit different, and I just wanted to highlight this as an example so that we all share the differences. Thank you.
Thanks, Izumi. Jan?
Yeah, thanks. Just wondering if on the transparency, whether the wording could be altered in such a way that it invites people to give a response which is more than their norms of disclosure. In other words, what they do to encourage what Joran in the earlier session talked about, the effective communication so that the receiver is helped to understand what is actually there. Because otherwise I can see that the groups might reply, oh, we disclose this, we put this on our website, and so on and so forth. But they might not say, this is what we actually do to try to make our communication clear, especially to those who are not acquainted with our norms and behaviors and practices and acronyms and so on.
So, Jan, it could be an additional sentence where it says transparency mechanisms for your AC and SO deliberations, decisions, and elections. Please describe further attempts you make to explain the documents and procedures that you make transparent.
That's the spirit I'm getting at. Thanks.
Thanks very much for all your questions and comments. So, I think we can declare the second reading successful, so the questions are going to be sent out. I think that it might make sense for us to add to our communication that should there be any questions surrounding the questions that the SOAC chairs or representatives that are working on this should either approach you or their respective CCWG member, because the CCWG member has a liaison function as well, so that, with those two additional communications windows, there shouldn't be any issues. I don't see any further remarks or wishes to speak, so with that we can close the session and even break for lunch a bit earlier. I would suggest that we still stick to the starting time of 13:15 so that you have a little bit more time to refresh and discuss with your colleagues. I see that Sebastian's hand is raised, so you want the final word, right, Sebastian?
Not at all. I hope that somebody else will have final word, but I would like to ask if it's possible to find some minutes in this afternoon to discuss what we heard from the CEO. I think there are some questions we need to take on stock and discussing among this group. Thank you.
I guess that's a good idea. There might be a couple of points in the afternoon's agenda where we might not exhaust the full time allocated to those points, and then we will gladly pick up that suggestion, which is very valuable, Sebastian. So with that, we can end the recording for this session. Thanks, everyone, and let's reconvene in 70 minutes, more or less. Thank you so much.